to the Amazing Average Breaking News segment. So when we rebooted this show, when we relaunched it, when we refreshed it, whatever reword you want to use, the idea was that we would do shows every other week. And for the most part, we have tried to keep that promise. But due to the wonders of Skype, that has been more of a headache than anybody's known. And I just wanted to start this episode with a brief update on that, because we have recorded, I think, two episodes. One we lost just due to skunked audio. In the final version, I wasn't like we have at least two people recording this show at any one time as a backup, and it just so happened that the last show that Scott hosted, and we'll redo that at some point.
Yes, I'm very distraught that we lost that.
Oh, I was too. It's a really fun episode. But in that case, my recording recorded Scott and Dan speaking, but not me, which actually would have worked for most of the podcast because I was pretty much there as window dressing. But near the end, there's like 10 minutes where there's just like dead air and them not responding to anything, then them responding to me, but you can't hear what I'm talking about. And then Scott had a recording, but thanks to the power of his recorder, the first 10 minutes are fine, and then everything else just has audio that's unusable. So I just wanted to say I apologize for that. I think if you're hearing this, I'm assuming we've worked out our Skype issues. At least on one end, we'll continue to see how that goes. And the minute that somebody comes along that makes this much simpler and I don't have to use Skype, I will be a happy, happy, happy camper. That said, we do have this this episode, which will be hosted by Dan. And I do have I actually have not checked this, so hopefully I'm making promises I can keep. I also have an introduction to Scott episode that's good to go when that happens.
Ooh.
Exciting. With that said, I'm hoping that we're back to our every other week schedule, and we return you to a brand new episode.
All right, and welcome to your regularly scheduled Amazingly Average show. I'm your host, Daniel, or Dan as some like to call me, and this is my first time hosting.
People call him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little unclear. I think dual wielding had a Dan on. I was the only Dan for a little bit, but now I'm, you know, maybe second, but I'm the only Dan in my own heart, so
and that's all that really matters.
Yeah, with me are Scott.
Hello.
And, of course, Earl.
Howdy.
And so for the first segment, I would like, and they don't know what this segment's going to be, I would like to discuss our favorite food. And I want to keep it general. So general, you can be specific if you want. If you say, like, you know, Mama Mabel's, you know, fried chicken specifically, you can say that. But if you want, also, you can, like, I can start off. So my favorite is, it's real general. It's pizza. I think that you can, you know, there's so many different kinds. I love Chicago pizza. I love New York pizza.
Yay.
I do not hate any pizza. I am all takers, you know. You can put anything on a pizza. Even some people put tomatoes on a pizza. I don't agree with that. But
can you put pizza on a pizza?
Yes, you can actually.
You can make a pizza sandwich.
Which is pizza? That would be pizza.
Yeah.
What if you get like those little mini pizzas and you use them on pizza instead of pepperoni?
That's a good idea. See, there's so many things, so many things you can do with it. What are you guys' favorite food genres, or if you want to be, you can be specific to like favorite food you have.
All right, I'll let Earl go first if he has it.
Mine is easy. Mine has always been the same, and part of the reason it is because of the rarity that in which I can consume it. So I've never really gotten sick of it. Not to say I get sick of food, but my favorite food is lasagna. It's just an absolute year.
Garfield himself is on our show.
Yes, but because it takes so much prep work, it's not something you cook every night. It's not even something I cook often. I've only attempted to cook it a few times. Usually, if I have it, it's like my sisters or my uncles or honestly friends Thanksgiving, Christmas. I'm a Lasagna whore, so if you ever have any, you want to just hand it to me. What's some corrections? I prefer meat lasagna. Like, you can go do the cheese stuff, but having vegetarian options isn't too keen for me. I'm kind of so-so on like meatballs and sausages. Like, I prefer ground beef in mine, but I've had it with different meats, and it does work out. I just prefer ground beef.
You said you booed Chicago pizza, but a lot of people, and I disagree with this, but a lot of people, and I see the similarities, will say that Chicago pizza and lasagna are very similar.
Yes, they are.
Do you like Chicago pizza? Or you don't have to call it Chicago pizza, but like what Chicago pizza is, do you think it's, do you like them similarly, or like can you see the relationship?
I and kind of well, the diff I mean, the major difference between pizza and lasagna would be the fact that it's is the bread and the crust, the dough. Lasagna does not have that, and that would be the major difference. I mean, lasagna is just cutting out the middleman. You're getting all the cheese, you're getting all the pasta noodles. There's no bread to show you down there. I okay. Honestly, I don't hate Chicago pizza. I hate the
He
concept.
said
I hate the concept of people thinking it's pizza. If you
Okay.
called it something else, we're fine. For pizza, it's not that, because the cheese to dough ratio is way off. Way off.
Okay, we don't have to get in a huge argument about this, but for me, pizza is anything that includes a crust, cheese, and pizza sauce, or like marinara sauce. So,
So I must have accidentally made a pizza salad the other day. Wow.
wait, why was the marinara
what
sauce
do you
on your
mean?
salad?
All right, listen, we didn't have like any salad dressing and the man
Was
has to
it
improvise.
good or?
Of course not.
Okay.
But I
Okay.
ate it.
So, so you don't
Well, we
have
can.
salad dressing, but you have marinara sauce sitting around.
Well, yeah, I like to make chicken parm a lot.
Oh, okay. That's a very good. Like, I'm a huge fan of any type of pasta, like that whole like
So you like
marinara.
Italian. Yeah, I love carbonara. Carbonara is one of my favorites. All right, Scott, what's your favorite food?
I'm gonna go broad spectrum here, and I'm just gonna just come right out and say I love chicken. I
Okay.
love every, just about every single way I've ever had chicken prepared, I've loved. I like chicken soup, chicken noodle soup, like chicken wild rice soup, you name it, I like it.
I think I was all soup. Not egg fried chicken, not egg grilled chicken, not egg
Well,
barbecue
if you
chicken.
gave me a
Have
second,
you ever had chicken and waffles?
I have had chicken and waffles, and I very much enjoyed it. I've
Did you
had
put
fried.
hot sauce and syrup on at the same time?
I don't recall, but I definitely had syrup on it.
Okay.
I don't
Hot
recall.
sauce is key.
But yeah, if I've had fried chicken, grilled chicken, everything, chicken with different sauces, like wings, it's just. You just cannot go wrong with having chicken as your protein in your meal. You can have it for breakfast. You can have it for lunch. You can have it for dinner. You can have it at 2 o'clock in the morning, cold right out of the fridge. It's always delicious. And there's always something that it can pair with in your kitchen, no matter what, unless it's the only thing in your kitchen. And even then, you can probably nibble on the toaster. That's all I have to say.
Well, even then, you can kind of just you can maybe bake it or fry it and make chicken fingers and have that
Yeah.
in the sandwich. You can make
What
chicken parm, like you said.
I like to do is I forget where I saw this. It was online somewhere. But instead of breadcrumbs, I like to take sweet chili Doritos, like
Oh,
sweet spicy chili Doritos, and grind them
I'm just gonna end that there before you finish whatever you're gonna do with the Doritos.
up. And then you grind it up and then use the Doritos as breadcrumbs and it's delicious. Don't even.
Because of the MSG, probably.
Definitely.
I can't argue with MSG. I mean, it's biologically designed to make you happy. I think that's a really good answer. I mean, chicken will not break the bank. It's you can use it, as you said, like a million different ways. Sometimes, chicken for me can be a little dry and a little bland, maybe. But
sometimes, if it's not done right.
Yeah, yeah. And I think with anything, it has to be done right. But, you know, there is bad pizza, but, you know, you know what they say about bad pizza, right? So I think part of the reason I like pizza so much is it's kind of hard to find bad pizza almost.
Like they say, and I think that's like sort of sex. Even when it's bad, it's still kind of good.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a really good choice. You were going to say something, Earl?
Oh, I was also going to say that I think one of the best things about chicken is that it's very difficult to screw up. Like most other meats, you can undercook, you can overcook. Like you can't really screw up chicken if you're a novice chef.
You can definitely undercook chicken.
You can undercook it, but it's very, like with other meats, sometimes it's hard to tell if you're undercooking it or something. With chicken, it's kind of...
It's kind of, you know, cut and dry.
Ha, ha,
yeah.
No.
No, it's usually like kinda pink if it's undercooked.
Yeah. With a good steak, it's really hard to not cook it. It's usually not bad anyway, because if you undercook it, I like my steaks like rare. And if you overcook it, it's like a burger. So like to me, steak is one of those things it's hard to like do wrong too, but
just a random aside, and then I guess we can start
the
episode. Is I did not know. I think I might have told this story before, that when you were in Canada, you can't get your meat cooked anyway, but well done. So
really,
yeah, health violations and all this stuff. Because yeah, like I don't like my stuff rare, but I prefer like medium rare. To medium, you know, where it's kind of cooked, but it's still kind of juicy. And I'm ordering my food that way. Like, oh, no, you can't order it that way. You can only do medium. You can only do well done here. I'm like, why? And I go,
that's not what?
Health wow, code that's violations really and viruses. Whatever. Medical.
And yet they have milk in a bag. You know? We're going to get a lot of Canadian complaints. But it's interesting, you know. Wow. That's I didn't know that.
Neither did I.
Well done chicken. I don't know if that would be great either. You know, the chicken, you don't want to overcook it either.
Yeah, I was about to say, they don't usually ask you how you want your chicken prepared, though.
Is it usually just for steak and hamburgers? So they'll ask you for a hamburger and say, you know, they won't ask you if you want it medium rare.
No, they'll just say, if you order it, and that's it.
Okay. A reason not to move to Canada when Trump wins.
Oh my God, that's like the worst. That's terrible. Like, I could never have a steak more cooked than medium. Medium well done. It's just.
Yeah, you know, there's no point having steak.
There's no point. Where's the juice? Where's the juice?
Then don't.
Where's the juice?
Don't.
Where's the beef?
It's like trying to drink straight. Orange pulp. It's like, where's the juice?
Oh, I was wondering where you're going with that, because I'm like, I can drink most stuff straight.
Can you drink pulp? Just pulp. Where's the juice? Pulp orange juice is like among the best. Some pulp, you know, it's
oranges,
amazing.
So, I mean, it's not like you don't. I mean, like, it's not straight pulp, but it's close to that.
A well-done steak is like drinking just pulp. Where is the juice?
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef?
The opposite of where's the beef. Wow, okay. And that was an interesting conversation. I didn't think it'd get a good Scott rant from it, but we did. So now I wanted to switch topics to the main conversation. Which is the new Nintendo console called the Nintendo Switch. And Earl's already talked about this a little bit on the Dual Wielding podcast. Check it out. But we wanted to get a little bit of more, our perspectives. Scott and I didn't get to weigh in. We want to do that. And it's, you know, it's big news. So, and it was my choice, so I chose it. So, So, Scott, you are a lapsed Nintendo fan.
That's
fair to say?
That's fair to say.
So on Twitter, you seemed pretty excited about the announcement. So what made you excited about the Nintendo Switch?
Well, the most exciting thing that I felt about the Nintendo Switch is that feel that they were trying to do with the Wii U, with that whole, like, oh, you can take the console and you can put the TV on it and then you can do stuff with it. And it really just, it did not resonate at all with me. But being able to see Nintendo simultaneously sticking to what it kind of knows best, which is, you know, that different kind of market than traditional, like, you know, the lack of a better term, hardcore gamers, the PS4 and Xbox One only people, it kind of sticks away from that with the idea behind, like, switching all the different components to the controller and the screen and the little screen and everything. But it also has shown, or it's trying to imply, that it can run a game like Skyrim. Now, Skyrim is a fairly, you know, it's a 5-year-old game, even though it just came out again today as of the recording of the show. But they're trying to show that, I feel like with the Wii U and the Wii, that Nintendo has tried to stick to their guns, which is, we just do first-party support and we don't really do third-party support. And now that they're actually expanding, and that's also one of the reasons I'm excited. You know, I love myself a good Mario, good Metroid and all that, but, you know, if I want to play, Elder Scrolls 6, maybe I want to play it on the Nintendo Switch so I can play it on the bus that I don't ride, you know?
Let's be honest with most people. They want to play it on the toilet.
That's what I meant.
I mean, that's honestly what they probably should have shown, because a lot of people discuss, and we discussed this on Dual Wielding as well, a lot of people mention, like, how a lot of those situations are unrealistic, which is probably true. But I'm sure many of us have had or playing a game, and, like, I gotta go to the bathroom, I don't want to pause this game.
That's fair. But what I also like about it is its obvious portability. Now, imagine this. You and your friends decide, hey, let's go to Dunkin' Donuts or wherever and play Super Smash Brothers. You can do that. I mean, you can do that now on the 3DS, but pretend that doesn't exist for a second. or pretend that... Or, you know, realize that it's really not that good on the handheld right now. But imagine being able to take the console and just go to, like, a restaurant or just go to a public place. I mean, I know it seems unrealistic, but that's because we haven't really had the chance to do it yet.
Well, I was going to say, there are some realistic elements to it, and I think the best example is something I think both of us, you know, kind of went through recently. New York Comic Con. I know a lot of people who go to these conventions, and you're online sometimes for an hour, hour and a half for panels and stuff like that. This would be a great component to have. Like, I've been online at PAX this year, and we're online, and somebody pulls out their 3DS and we'll play Luigi's Mansion 2, because that has, like, the download phase. So you need one copy of the game, and anybody around you can play. So I'm like, yes, that's a practical example. For that, I think normal people would go through on a decent basis. Like you said, you can have meetup. Like, people have LAN parties now, so it would be no different than, like, bringing your console. But, you know, it's easier to just take this device than it would be to take your console and otherwise needed to run it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the portability, I think it's divisive because it is a pretty big system. You know, it's not going to fit in your pocket, obviously. It is about the same size as the Wii U gamepad. And, you know, I think playing it on a plane, playing it, you know, maybe on the train, waiting in line, you know, is maybe a possibility. I do think it's there are people that won't do that because of how big it is. But I think having the options is always good. You know, having more options is always good. And I think that, you know, I do think that the Wii U seems in retrospect like a prototype for this system because, you know, as Earl was saying, like playing it on the toilet, that's kind of the furthest distance you could get away from your console and still play your Wii U. Whereas this, you can be on the other side of the country and be playing the same game you were playing at home, yeah. Which is, you know, really cool. And you don't have to be connected to the internet like, you know, if you were doing, you know, playing on your, yeah, on your Vita, which is also cool. But, like, being able to take it with you and actually playing the game, having no lag, is really cool. Now, does that excite the person who, you know, had an Xbox 360 last year or last generation and hasn't decided yet what system they're going to get? I don't know. I don't know if it does that, but I don't know that it needs to do that. You know, I think there is some talk about how people would rather have a system that was not portable and just was maximizing power and just sort of was at the same level of Scorpio or PS Pro. But, you know, I just don't think that would really, you know, coming out like 3 years later compared to the original Xbox One and the original PS4, it could be a similar, if they did just done that, it seemed like it might be a similar situation to the Wii U.
Well, I mean, even more than that, I mean, I'm biased in this regard, is that I don't necessarily want three of the same devices. Like, even now, there's some redundancy. Like, I mean, I don't know about you folks. Like, I have an Xbox One. It's very little reason for me to get a PlayStation 4. And I'm sure there's people who have PlayStation 4 which find very little reason to get an Xbox One. So,
right.
And it's the same thing with the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. And that, like, they're exclusive on both, but Microsoft nor Sony puts them out in such great quantities that you need both systems. Like, what happens is people tend to find the franchises they like. Uncharted, Ratchet and Clank, you know, David Cage games, Gears of War, Halo, Forza, whatever. With Nintendo, and I think this is the most exciting part of the Switch to a lot of people, is like it's going to be the first time we ever see them have a uniformed output for both handheld and consoles. Because like, if you're a Wii U owner, this year has been terrible. If you're a 3DS owner, it's actually been a pretty decent year. But you combine it, and it's a really good year for Nintendo. They've actually had a lot of, we still have Pokemon to come, but Paper Mario, Fire Emblem Awakening, they had Kirby's, they had the Kirby game, they had Fire Emblem Shin Megami game. There's a lot of good games out this year, and last year was the same thing. So imagine them having to focus only on one system. You also cut out a lot of the redundancy. Like, I enjoy it because I like these franchises, but Mario Kart 7 and Mario Kart 8, you'd only need one of those. You wouldn't need a Smash Brothers for Wii U and a Smash Brothers for 3DS. You wouldn't need a Super Mario 3D Land and a Super Mario 3D World and stuff like that. So it cuts out redundancies where they can focus on stuff like Splatoon or Codename Steam and stuff like that. Or they can focus on getting you these sequels to these amazing games. Instead of having to like, okay, we have to support the 3DS this year, now we have to support the Wii U, and both of them suffering when the other one's being propped up.
Yeah, and, you know, for me personally, that was the biggest thing that excited me. I'm probably not going to use the Switch portably very much, like, if at all, maybe on a plane or something, but, you know, to me, it's really the next home console. And, you know, all the other stuff is fine, but, like, I'm going to be playing with the asymmetrical gamepad, which I'm so excited about, because that's the biggest thing I don't like about the Wii U and the PS4 is the symmetrical sticks. And being able to dedicate, you know, I think there is definitely an argument to make that game development now compared to 10, 15 years ago takes more people. And them trying to split between 3DS and Wii U just obviously did not work. And I'm hoping that, by doing this, they're not going, you know, I think there will still be 3DS games coming out for a couple years, because there is a large user base for that, but I don't think that's going to be Nintendo's major focus, like it was.
Oh, no, and it shouldn't be. And I think I've mentioned something similar to, I don't know if I mentioned it on the show or I mentioned it on Twitter. My hope is that with the 3DS, is what Nintendo makes it is more of the experimental system. My hope is that they make the new 3DS, I hate those names, the default 3DS, so that they can get more indie games. Because, like you said, there's a base of about 65 million people, and it's still a relatively active base, and it's going to continue to be that way for a while, because, like I said, Pokemon Sun and Moon is a big game that's out next month. They have announced, you know, like the Mario Sports Collection next year, I should say. They announced the Pikmin 2D platformer and some other games. So there's still a lot of life left in that system. I think Dragon Quest VIII, there's a localization of that. We still don't have Yo-Kai Watch 3. They just announced a new Monster Hunter game this week. Whatever Monster Hunter.
Which comes out in March, so it may actually be coming to the Switch as well.
But,
I do think that's a really good point. And I think the 3DS, I don't think they'll have it go away. I think they'll have it keep coming down in price. The 2DS, I don't, you know, is $80, I think, right now.
Yeah.
Like, that, there's not much lower it can go. And it's the perfect place for someone who wants to give their kid, you know, a system to play Pokemon on. I think the biggest, you know, the biggest thing that people are still kind of unsure about, and Nintendo's tried to address this, as you said, Scott, with the Skyrim in the video, was the third-party support, right? So they put up a big screen, bigger than the Wii U, of, you know, pretty much everybody, all the major publishers, and, you know, it looks like it's going to get support from mostly everyone. And, you know, we don't know for sure. We'll find out in January, which is another discussion. But we do know that the system, at least from rumors, will be powerful, but maybe not as powerful, maybe slightly less powerful than the Xbox One. And we don't know if the stand will have extra processing or anything like that. But, you know, it is conceivable that it could play any game that could come out on PS4, or Xbox One, maybe, you know, not the Scorpio version or the PlayStation, you know, Pro version, but they're obviously going to have to put out a base version too. So, I, for me, the biggest reason the Wii U didn't get third parties wasn't for any other reason than it didn't have good, you know, people weren't buying it, and they're not going to put out games. It's kind of a catch-22, right? You know, third parties only want to put out games on systems that have a large user base, install base. But you don't get a large install base unless there's usually
third-party support.
Right. And I think the Switch, I think what they're trying to do is they're going to say, And this goes to the price, and we can talk about the price, what we think the price will be, but I think they might try to aggressively, you know, price the system so that it does get a large install base, so that the third parties don't back out like they did with the Wii U. Because I think if the Wii U had the same install base as the PS4 right now, you know, it would be getting downports. Like, it would be worth it to them if it had the install base to make inferior versions, you know, less powerful versions, because they would, you know, make, they would, it would be worth it to them. And I think, you know, for me, also the biggest thing about the Switch is that Mario game. And, like, that's something that the Wii U did not have a 3D Mario. It had, had 3D, you know, Mario 3D World.
It's not in 3D World.
I really like 3D World. I really like it. But it is not on the same level as a Galaxy 2 or Super Mario 64. and, you know, maybe Sunshine, you know, if you want to include that. But I do think that Sunshine being kind of, I don't know, I see it as how goes Mario, how goes the system. Because to me, the reason that the GameCube wasn't as successful as it could have been was partially, and this is maybe controversial or not true or anything like that, but partially because Sunshine was not just a sequel to Mario 64.
Well, I mean, that's a discussion for another day. There's a lot that you could say about the GameCube. But I did want to make a point that you were talking about third parties, and I think something that people miss, either they don't want to acknowledge, or maybe it's not something we think is glamorous, is that since the Wii launch, the industry has changed a lot. And I do think, because, you know, you mentioned install base and, you know, where do consumers go, the businesses go, which wasn't true in the Wii's case because that was the best-selling system of that generation, but it didn't really get much third-party support. But I do think that the industry as a whole is better positioned to kind of cater to that demographic with, you know, the emergence of mobile. And I do think that's going to be a part of the Switch that people are going to look into. I don't necessarily know if it's going to change like the hardcore PS4 or Xbox One fans, but the fact of the matter is, I do, you know, like the specs that we've seen, the specs that are rumored, and the company they're working with, a lot of what's under the hood of the Switch is very similar to the Nvidia Shield. And what I think that means for us is not necessarily a powerhouse, but it does mean that there's a lot of people who are familiar with the architect who make mobile games, who make tablet games. And I can see that being a market that the Switch gets, especially, you know, if they have a really decent digital store where people can put out, you know, like a first-person shooter. Like, they can port over their first-person shooter from the NVIDIA TV with no effort.
I do think that is a really good point. And that is one of the things we do not know is, and we'll hopefully find this out, and I'm sure we will, in January. And there are rumors that it's a multi-touch screen, and there are rumors that there's some level of motion control. And the level of mobile support is something we don't know, but it makes sense, and they've talked about this before, that having Pokemon Go, having Super Mario Run on the Nintendo Switch makes a lot of sense, right? It's a question, you know, especially with Pokemon Go. With Mario Run, you know, that would be pretty easy to do as long as there's a touch screen. And even if there wasn't, it wouldn't be a big deal. You know, you could easily convert that. With Pokemon Go, though, then you get into issues of 3G, LTE. Like, is this system going to have a wireless, you know, subscription? Because then you start getting into complicated, you know, one of the things I'm worried about is the amount of things packed into this. You know, people will say, oh, it's not as powerful as a PS4, but it's a portable system. It's relatively thin. It's got apparently a multi-touch screen. It's got these two controllers it has to charge. If it's got, you know, like, it's got obviously Wi-Fi. You know, if it has 3G capabilities as well, you know, it's just a matter of how much is being packed into this thing. And what do you guys think? Do you think it'll have 3G? You know, being able to browse the internet from anywhere kind of capability?
I'm of two minds about this. One, I think it needs to, because if it's portable, and you mentioned earlier that it doesn't fit in your pocket. I mean, I think nowadays we're kind of used to that, because most things don't fit in your pocket because we prefer bigger screens, but it's competing then with your tablet. And at that point, is like, are you going to have a substitute that doesn't have, like, it doesn't have built-in internet. It doesn't have 4G or 3G. And it's also going to need a suite of software support, not just games. Like, if it's going to compete with my tablet, it needs an e-reader. It needs a web browser. It needs Netflix. It needs Hulu. It needs Amazon. It needs, you know, some type of weather app. Because this is, like, you know, I don't check the weather that often, but it's something I use my tablet for every once in a while.
I think that's a really good point. And the rumors are, and this is another thing we don't know, but the rumors are that, and I think pretty much all the rumors will turn out to be true based on how the rumors went, leading up to this, is that it has 32 gigs of internal storage, which is not very much, right? I think on my PS4, probably those apps are maybe 5 gigs. So you start putting that, plus you put an OS, it doesn't leave a lot of room for, maybe one or two games you could download onto the system that are full. There was a little bit of talk today about the amount of storage on the carts being about 15 gigs, which is...
Well, I think that's the
smaller than a Blu-ray. Yeah. But there's gonna be big questions about, how much you can download and keep on the system at any one time. And that could, not saying it will, but it could be a hindrance to people wanting to, use it as a replacement for their tablet.
Okay. Two different points. I'll try to answer them each. Okay, comparison to a tablet would be difficult because, for instance, I literally just bought a new tablet this week. My tablet space comes with 16 gigs internally, and I bought a 64 gig memory card. That will be fine for me for a while on my tablet because most apps aren't that big. Like, really, what takes up the most room on my tablet is the fact that I stock them with movies and TV shows I watch, on my commute when I travel. So if they get stuff like that, a lot of this stuff doesn't necessarily need to be huge. If you're conservative about it, you get your phone and you get or if you have a tablet, a web browser is maybe a few, maybe 100 megabytes. Most games are less than a gig, just because most phones don't come with huge space options. So that's not going to be a problem. What's going to be a problem are the games, because we're in a generation where you can literally get games that have 50 gig updates.
Call of Duty is 130 gigs, including Modern Warfare. So, I don't think this will be, in one way, I don't think it's a huge problem because I don't think the use case will be that you're going to be storing all your games on the system and then playing them wherever. I think they're going to be on the cart. And hopefully it won't, because they're on carts, they won't need to install into the hard drive like they do in modern systems, which...
They wouldn't, because part of that is the read speed, and you don't necessarily need that with a memory card. But the problem with that, I think the biggest issue is I don't mind their 32 gigs on board. I don't mind their SD card support. The problem is it doesn't seem to support external hard drives. And I understand why you wouldn't support that in the portable mode. But I do think it would be wise for them to allow you to use the dock to have a hard drive hooked up to it, so that you don't have to keep on downloading games. I have no problem putting it in, and say keeping five to eight games on the device itself between the memory card and internal storage. But if it's really that I have to re-download this game every time, then it's not worth it. But if it's I can keep our hard drive there, this is where all my games are, and I just kind of come and move stuff around, I'm fine with that. But if it's I want to play Mario this weekend, I got to download Mario all over again, then it's not worth it, especially being that on the 3DS and the Wii U, download speeds are just not that great. I don't know if they toddle it or what, but it's much slower than my PS3 or my Xbox One are when it comes to downloading things.
And I think that's a good point. And we talked about third parties a little bit, and AAA third parties like Bethesda and EA and stuff like that. And it is a question. Are they going to focus more? Is this all sort of talk? Or are they going to focus more on 3DS level, mobile level games? Because if they are doing that, at least on the go, those will fit on a 32 gig, storage. But there's sort of this disconnect or confusion about, are you going to be playing more AAA games? Or are you going to be playing more mobile 3DS level games? And I think what the appeal of the Switch is, if you take out all the restrictions, which we can talk about battery life and things like that, if you take out storage restrictions, if you take out battery life restrictions, it's the ability to play Skyrim or, you know, Titanfall or, you know, these kind of big AAA games on the go, right? That's like the big appeal. And when you start thinking about all the realistic like implications of battery life, which I think is a huge deal, and I think if it is 3 hours like it's been rumored to be, I think that will turn a lot of people off. Because it, you know, I think that is too short, but you know,
Again, I think it depends. Because where are you going for 3 hours? I guess is the question I would have. Because like if you're driving in a car, you can use a car charger. If you're going to the airport, you can find a charger at the airport. So it's really like if you're out for 3 consecutive hours and you need this for something. I guess a good example, again, going back to like Comic-Con, because there aren't as many places to charge up. But I've said this before, and it's not necessarily defensive for Nintendo, but as a whole, battery technology needs to improve. I think this is something we've had discussions with, not us, but as an industry for 10 years now, because the 3DS came out, it had a terrible battery life. The Vita came out, it had a terrible battery life. The Wii U came out, it had a terrible battery life. The PlayStation 4 DualShock controller has a terrible battery life.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And at some point, it's not the technology. It's the fact that battery tech hasn't really improved in such a long time. I mean, same thing. iPhones have terrible batteries. Most smartphones, compared to like what you did with the Nokia. And it's not that these devices are just being cheap. It's like you can put so big of a battery inside of a device before it becomes, you know, clunky or a fire hazard. I think the big problem with the Switch, as I see it now, is the Wii U, you could buy an extended battery. Like, it didn't do much. I think it went up to, like, 6 hours or something like that. But you can do it. You can't necessarily do that with the Switch because you can't really put anything bigger on the system because then it wouldn't dock. And it's going to be a pain in the ass if you have to remove it every time you want to charge it.
Well, I think there will be ways to charge it, you know, the go.
Yeah, I mean, they said that it's a USB-C underneath, so, you know, it will charge like most phones, non-iPhones do.
Right. I just think it's not really the use case of it. It's just like the, in your mind, like, do you know what I mean? It's like the perception of the device. You know, when you have a laptop, you're never really going to be using a laptop for 5 hours straight, you know, without charging it. I'd never do. But you know, you want it to have 9 or 10 hours of battery life just because that sounds better than 5 hours. You know what I mean? Like
again, at the same time, like the 3DS battery life is only like 4 or 5 hours. And we don't necessarily have that Menchu image of like, I carry my 3DS around everywhere because like that's the battery life. But if you actually don't use it, like, you know, it lasts a while.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think 3 hours just scares people. I think if it was 4 or 5, people would be okay with it.
I think, and I think what they'll do, and you'll probably have a bunch of numbers floating around. You'll probably have a bunch of tests. Is what's going to happen is like Skyrim, you know, if they have Titanfall, if they have Overwatch, those are going to be like the games you get like 3 hours, and then you'll get like, you know, you'll get like your little indie digital titles like Axiom Verge or Shovel Knight, and then the battery life is going to be like 6 hours. So they'll they'll say something like it's 3 to 6 hours depending on the game you play, and that would break some people's fears.
That makes sense. And you know, for me, it doesn't really affect me because, as I said, I'm not really going to use it portably. But you know, I do want the system to be bigger. You know, I want it to get the good install base that at least the GameCube had. I want good. You know, I'm not a Nintendo first person anymore, but I do love Nintendo games. And I love when Nintendo is successful. So for me, you know, part of the reason I'm excited is because it does seem like Nintendo's on the right track. And, you know, I think one of the things that could hurt them or help them is the price. So what do you guys think what do you think they'll price it at? Because I think that's one of the probably the biggest question that we'll have going into the January event. What would be a good price for you, Scott?
What would be... I think that the best and the most reasonable price would probably be between $250 and $350. Now, the thing about a $250 Nintendo Switch, though, that actually kind of scares me, that's cheap. And I wouldn't want that to, you know, be reflected by, you know, how well the console's going to ultimately do, things like that, how well it's put together. You know, I'd rather pay, my philosophy has always been, I'd rather pay more for products and services that are, you know, up to basic standards. You know, it's, I would pay for a $350 Nintendo Switch, most likely. You know, based on the little information I have right now, yeah, we're supposed to be getting more and more, but based on what I know right now, if it's promising what it's promising, I'd pay up to $350, but I'd be more comfortable with $300, and I think $250 is it could be 252, but I don't know if I necessarily want it to be.
Price is a funny thing. I mean,
I know. I mean, it's
because I mean, to your point, like you price something too high, it becomes a premium. You price it too low, it becomes cheap. And it, you know, because if the Dan says into it, I don't do it with an item. Argue for 250. My thinking is, I think 300. And you can see that argument there. What I do want to make note of now, and I think this is something I haven't said before, is that the system launches in March, as of right now. If they launch it at 300, and let's say it doesn't do well, it gives them wiggle room at the end of the year to drop it to 250. Well, if you drop it at 250 and you don't do well, there's not much wiggle room. Like, you can drop it to 200, but at that point, I have to imagine it would be taking a bath on it. But yeah, I don't think they want to go above 300. I honestly don't think they want to repeat anything that they did with the Wii U. And having the Wii U, you know, I think a lot of people forget, for good reason, that the Wii U launched two different bundles. There was a $300 version and $350 version. And, you know, the way it was phrased, it sounded like you avoided the $300 version because it was the basic version. That sounds like the bare bones, least amount of work version. And the other one was called the Deluxe version, which sounds much better. So I do think it will be 300, and I think it gives them wiggle room if the thing does not take off as they expect it to in March. You know, over the summer, they can say, okay, it's 250 in October to kind of give it a second life even into the Christmas season, and hopefully have some third parties on board to help them out with that. What about you, Dan?
I'm torn about it. I do think so. There's a couple things I'm thinking about, and it's sort of like all coming together. So one is, on a personal level, I want the install base to be as high as possible, as we talked about with the third parties. You know, if third parties are going to get on board, they need to see good sales at the beginning, first few months, right? PS4 Slim and Xbox One S are $300 right now. Right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
So by March, you know, if Sony and Microsoft want to, like, undercut Nintendo, they could easily drop the price to $250 on those. So I'm worried that if they come in at $300 and people are directly, and even if they don't cut the, if Sony and Microsoft don't cut the price, I'm worried that people will directly compare the Switch to, you know, the PS4 PS4 Slim and the Xbox One S. And so my feeling is that I think they should sell the console at a loss. And I know they've said they don't want to do this, but I feel like this is like a pivotal point, and they have a large supply of cash. Nintendo is very conservative in the way that they spend money. And I think it would be an aggressive move, and I don't know that they'll do it, but to try to sell it at a loss to really get systems, you know, into the market, get this, you know, momentum. And I think 250 maximum really is what they need to get at. You know, if you look at the 3DS, it came out at 250, right? And it was really doing poorly until they dropped it to 180. And I'm worried that they can't really... And the same thing with the Wii U. The Wii U started at 350. That was too much. The Wii came out at 250, and that seemed to be a good price. And people were happy with even a less powerful system at 250. So I think 250 max. I think if it comes out at 300, and this, you know, I could turn out to be wrong, and I hope I am, but I do think it will be 300. But I think if it does come out at 300, I think there'll be people that will be comparing it directly and not pick it up.
Oh yeah, I mean that's going to be an issue for them, no matter what. I think at that point, and I guess this is when we can talk about the expectations for the January 12th event. Is that it's going to come down to launch. I mean, I think one of the good and bad things they have going for them next year is that next year doesn't necessarily have a ton of major games in the first quarter right now. Like, that will change once things start getting release dates, but, you know, there's not like a GTA or Red Dead Redemption or a Call of Duty in the first quarter, so they have a window where they can make the conversation about themselves. And if you mm-hmm. come out, you know, we already know that Zelda's going to be there at launch or near launch. So, that's, yeah. If you have that...
Zelda will be there at launch, for sure.
If you have it that, has. You have Mario Kart, you have Splatoon, you know, around the first 3 months or so, and you have Mario later in the year, it's a good lineup to kind of get people talking and to kind of control the conversation. And if you throw in a few third-party parts, like Skyrim, you know, NBA, I assume at that point... it's been rumored that For Honor is going to come. Maybe Injustice. You get a few of those games there at that time. You can create a system that seems appealing. Because, you know, like we mentioned with Dual Wheel, and the problem with one of the problems with the Wii U was it got third-party support early on, but a lot of it was old games. And then it was like they were not included in any of the announcements of the new games. Where here, it's like you got to get old games, but you also have to be on board for the games that are going to be out in April and May and June of next year.
I think that's a really interesting point. You know, releasing a console in March is very risky. I mean, I think maybe the PS2 came out. The PS2 came out in March, I believe, in 2000.
Well, the last device that came out in March was the 3DS.
Right, which that didn't go very well. The launch wasn't super successful. But I believe the PS2 did come out in March. I think it's a little bit worrying that they're trying to release it before their fiscal year ends. You know, it seems very... And this could be completely wrong, and this could be like have nothing to do with it, but it does seem a little bit like, oh, we need to save our stock price by releasing it, you know?
I think that's it and not it, because I think everybody knows what that is at that point. But I think really, it's if you're missing the holiday season, it's the second best time of the year to go for, because March is tax season. That's when people have the disposable income, because everybody's getting back their tax returns. And it's much mm-hmm. easier to be like, oh, I can spend $300-$400 on something. Because, I mean, people get their tax returns and they throw it on something big.
That's what I'm going to spend my tax return on this year.
And so it's a good time. The problem with that, I mean, it depends on how you swing it. The problem tends to be like the quietest months of the year for video games are the summer. So if you launch, you come out hot, then you cool off until the end of the year. there's a problem. Like, if you do it in the holiday, you have the holidays, you can cool off in January, but you're back February, March, and then you can cool off again. There's a much longer stretch, so they really need to plan this out where it's like at least one major Nintendo game a month. So, because like a lot of people would say like, oh, you have to have Mario and Zelda and Splatoon and Mario Kart all at launch. You don't want them at launch because you can't pay 50 games at launch. You want Zelda at launch. You want Splatoon and Mario Kart within the first 3 months. You want Mario. Ideally, you want Mario in like August to kind of not during the holiday season, but to prop it up before then. And then in the holiday season, you either come up with a big title, like you come up with a new Metroid or you come up with a new IP or
Well,
something.
yeah, I mean that's in, that's the big question is, do they have something like that? I mean, the people saying that Mario would be ready at launch, I don't buy that at all. I mean, apparently this is a rumor, but the reason they didn't reveal the console in September is that Mario wasn't ready. It wasn't performing well. So to me, that tells me it's not coming till fall at the earliest, which is fine. To me, that's fine. Like, come out September, as you're saying, late August, early September. That's the perfect time for Mario. You don't need all this stuff at launch. People, there'll be people that buy it at launch no matter what. You're right. It needs to not have droughts like the Wii U did. And I don't know that they will be able to do that. Even with consolidating their teams, it's not like Sony or Microsoft are putting out a game a month, right? This would be the if they're if you if you if they want to put out 6 games in 6 months, which would be over the summer, that's not easy to do.
It's not easy to do, but also it seems like part of their strategy is to have remasters, to have remakes. Like Splatoon isn't Splatoon 2, it's Splatoon with more content. Mario Kart seems to be Mario Kart 8 with more content. And this works for two reasons. One, with Mario Kart, it's a once in a generation game, but you can have this and work on Mario Kart 9 until like 2019. And have that be your big holiday title 2 years from now. And Splatoon is so relatively new, and since the Wii U had such a small install base, that you can it's very popular, but you can expose it to a brand new audience. But you have that, you'll have Zelda, I assume you'll probably have some party games, and then you can spread it out with, especially if you work with third parties, if you have these deals signed up, and if you're smart, because I assume there's a lot of games that they had on the Wii U that they decided to move over to the Switch because they realized the system wasn't selling. But yes, you want, like, I mean, okay, if you look at this year, Nintendo released, what, 5 Wii U games and maybe 10 3DS games? That's almost one a month if you space it out properly. Now, granted, the 3DS takes a lot less resources, and I think this is one thing that I asked about on Twitter. I did not get favorable responses, which I was personally surprised by, is that would people accept 3D level graphics in games if the games were like $30? Like, would you be okay with having like an Ace Attorney game that looks like an Ace Attorney game on 3DS just blowing up to your TV, or do you want that to be redone with brand new HD models?
What do you think, Scott?
Don't know how I feel about that. I mean, coming out with like brand new HD, generally I'm against, for the most part, remaking games again just for the new console. I mean, I know that when the PS4 came out, certain games were being remade for it, like The Last of Us, Grand Theft Auto 5. They were remade for the new consoles, and they were admittedly late in the previous console life cycle, so they probably just should have held off until the new consoles came out. But they. It sort of rubs me the wrong way when you release the same game a second time. But then again, I did rebuy Elder Scrolls V.
And I agree with you, but at the same time, like you said, the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, and to a certain extent, the 3DS, and I guess the Wii U, mostly with the Zelda, the Wind Waker, and Twilight Princess, is we've gotten accustomed to the point that remasters and remakes and re-releases are now just part of the industry. And I think people, I don't necessarily know if everybody likes it, but I think people do accept it. I think it's easier for people to swallow buying a game they know they're going to like over buying a game they don't know anything about. Because you talk about that, like, Last of Us sold well, GTA 5 sold well, the remastered
sold
version.
Really well.
Yeah. The Uncharted Collection sold well. Halo Master Chief Collection sold well. Gears of War Ultimate Edition sold well. So there's a market for that. And especially, like I said, especially in the case of the Wii U, like I have a problem with it. Bank it, stop. But the major difference between the Wii U and like Xbox 360 and PS3 remasters to me is with the PS3 and the Xbox 360, you had a user base of about 170 million people. With the Wii U, you have a user base of 13 million. If the Switch does well, you have a much wider audience to expose these games to. If these were Wii remakes, I'd be a bit more iffy on that, because that was a 100 million selling system. You're not necessarily getting new people with that. But with the Wii U, because I feel so many people missed out on so many games. That being said, I don't want to see every Wii U game show up. I don't, like, as much as I would love to see Ego City and, you know, Wind Waker and stuff, like, you don't need every game. You need the big ones. You don't need 3D World. I have 3D World, but if you're getting a new Mario game, you don't need that Mario there. You don't need Xenoblade X or anything like that.
And this will be completely hypothetical, but my biggest hope, and I think I've talked about this before, is that Nintendo will sort of get with the times, as they say, and put out a streaming service similar to Netflix, and if it's just Nintendo games, that would be fine for me, you know. And I do think you're right, Earl. I think they would rather have people buy Splatoon again, and I think you could say, you know, if you add things, there's an argument for that. But I think that having the virtual console is such an important, or is the most underutilized aspect of Nintendo systems to me. And I think even if you just did Nintendo published games, if you had NES games, SNES games, N64, GameCube, Wii, and Wii U, just Nintendo games, and I think you could get others, as they've shown with the classic NES, that people would pay $5, $10, $15 a month for that. And I think that would help to, you know, cover up any holes there are in the release window, because people would be playing these older games. And I've sort of gone on that. What do you think about that?
I do think it's gotten to the point where I think people aren't going to buy virtual console games for a third or fourth time. If you bought on the Wii, the Wii U, the 3DS, I do think that a subscription model would work. I think that, especially being that they've done a lot of the work already, like, it's there's enough games for you to add, you know, like, do like the WWE Network, have like 100 games at launch, and then like every month add like another 20 or 25. Because, you know, like, they've had the opportunity with the Wii U, and the 3DS to do it right. And, I've given them a lot of backs, especially with the Wii, because the Wii was the first one. But at some point, you do realize, like, okay, you're repeating a lot of these games, and there's no reason for it to be, like, one game a month at this point. Even beyond, like, okay, it's hard to get licenses for a lot of old games because this company's defunct and this person owns this site. Right. But not even, like, not all Nintendo games are on the virtual console yet. And that's on them. That's mostly all on them. So, yes, I do think it's time for them to get, maybe they can have a premium. Maybe it's, like, $10 to get you, like, the NES, the Genesis, and the Super Nintendo level. and $15 get you 20, 15 or 20 bucks get you all the 3D games and everything else. But I do think that will, and I think beyond just the Switch, I do think that's a good business model, because you don't need to tie it into just one system. Like, you can release a like the NES Classic, release something like that for the Game Boy, and that will be just a virtual console game. You can download, you can stream games to that service and take it on the go with you.
And if you want to try to impress investors, I think if they got, this streaming Nintendo service, I think there's two ways you could go. You could go keep it strictly on the Switch to try to increase Switch user base, and I think that's probably more likely. But if they want to, they've been pretty aggressive in terms of mobile. If they could get an Apple TV app that plays Nintendo games on it that you get for $99, like, that would at least make investors happy, and it would at least hold over, maybe, it would make them a lot of money, obviously. It really would be a shame if they don't try to capitalize on that, because they do have the biggest, like with Scott, like, you used to play NES, SNES, Game Boy, right? Mm-hmm. Those games, you have an attachment to those games. You can't necessarily play them right now. Being able to pay $5 a month to play them, would be pretty enticing, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I think especially now, and I think we'll see how the NES Classic does. I also do think you're getting to the point where a lot of people who grew up with the NES and beyond, a lot of those people are now adults like myself, who are having kids, and you can introduce, it's a good way to introduce your kids without having them kind of hog your own system. So yes, it's kind of being selfish, but it's like, okay, I can play on my Switch and you can play, like on your Apple TV, like you said. And the best thing about that, if it's a streaming model, you don't necessarily lose any revenue by not having it exclusive to your system, and you can sell peripherals. Like, you can sell like a Nintendo shaped, an official Nintendo controller for the Apple TV, or official Nintendo controller for like your Android TV or something like that. And like, it's $10, but you sell enough for those, and that $10 is an extra revenue source you didn't have before.
Yeah, I think that would be really huge. And, they've obviously, putting Mario, Pokemon Go, I think is sort of, there's some argument about how much Nintendo owns that, but I think putting Mario, and I think Mario Run will do really, really well. And I think that will sort of help push Nintendo to think, maybe we can, get onto these other systems, work with Apple some more, and really just increase the mind share for Nintendo. And I think that ultimately will help the Switch. And I hope they kind of see that, but it's always hard to know what Nintendo's thinking, I think.
Yeah. And I think that's always been the problem with them. It's like, they zig when everybody wants them to zag, and they're up when everybody wants them to be down. They're a very hard company to predict. Except for the fact that we do know the next time we'll hear about the Switch, which is
January 12th,
2017.
I know. It should be. There will be a lot of hype going into that conference, gosh, that presentation.
It's already at terrible levels, and we're still 2 months away. But yeah, it's interesting because especially recent Nintendo, like even with this reveal, like the Switch announcement was made the night before. It's literally like, oh yes, stay tuned for the world premiere of our new console tomorrow in like 12 hours. Mm-hmm. And this is like, and this is like, oh no, this time we're giving you 2.5 months a notice. So yes, the hype bubble is just going to build and build, and there's no way it's going to keep up with people's expectations. But I do like that they've given us this heads up. I do like that they pretty much told us what to expect: games, price, release date, But I think the most important
thing... I mean, there won't be much time between that conference and when it releases.
Yeah, yeah, and I...
There's as much time between now and the conference as when it releases from the conference, basically.
Yeah, about 2 months apiece. Yeah, and you know, I said this on, again, I hate referencing the other show, but I said this on Dualworld, is that I went with the NX, like, the time frame, because I expected when they did eventually reveal it that they would have a blowout, which actually wasn't the case. Like, they revealed it, and we still have a lot of unanswered questions, but it's good to know, like, this is literally, like, the last possible second. Like, this is, like, January 12th. Yeah. If it's at the end of March, it leaves them roughly 2.5 months to market this thing.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, pre-orders and marketing blitz, it's really not a lot of time. You know, the PS4 was announced in February, came out in November. You know, having less than 6 months between really showing everything is pretty rare. And even if you count October as the initial reveal, that's not 6 months. So it's definitely going to be
the most interesting launch. It's the shortest time between announcement and launch of a system. Well, reveal, because we had the announcement many months ago. Almost a year and a half ago now. But the reveal and the launch are a much tighter window. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because in the week and a half since this announced, they've generated so much buzz and interest already about this device. So that's there. And that's a good thing, actually, for them, because they don't have to prolong it over a year and a half period. Like, you know, the Wii U was announced in, you know, June of 2011, didn't come out until September of 2012. That's a year and a half of... honestly, they didn't maintain that. Like, it was like they mentioned it at June. You didn't hear about it again for another year. And then after that, you didn't hear about it again for another 3 months. That was just a really bad pacing. Where this is like, yes, you get 2.5 months. I still think that's a bad idea, but at least they were smart enough to be like, we're going to talk about it, and this is what you're going to know. So people know what to look forward to, and more importantly, when to look forward to it, instead of like, is it going to be this week? Is it going to be this week? Is it going to be this week? Is it going to be this week?
Yeah, I think they had to come out and address the name and just sort of some of the general issues. And I think they did that pretty well. And I do think this could be a trend for the future, where there's less lead time between announcements and things coming out. And I think that's good for everybody. You know, and for games, for systems, yeah. I think that's good for the community.
Yeah. I mean, but, as an aside, I mean, as of this recording, I'm sure, I don't know how much of it this you saw this morning, but you compare this to something like the No Man's Sky reaction. No Man's Sky was a game that was just buried underneath its expectations that people built up
over
3 years. I know people are rightly pissed. I understand that. But that was... like, Hello Games was responsible. Hello Games and Sony were responsible for never properly managing expectations. But if you have hype that builds up that long for a lot of people, nothing in the world is ever going to live up to it. And this is, like, the extreme reaction to that, is how people are treating No Man's Sky. So...
I think expectations and the amount of time, the amount of time between when No Man's Sky was announced and when it came out really hurt it. And, you know, it's another topic, but, yeah, it's a shame what happened to that. But I do think, I think you make a good point. I think people will learn from that, hopefully. And they will, hopefully. And they will hopefully realize that when you set expectations for something and you don't live up to it, that people will remember that, you know, and it's not all, you know, there's no, in video games, you know, not all PR is good PR. I think Nintendo's off to a good start. The reveal has gotten a lot of, you know, YouTube hits. It overshadowed Red Dead 2, which is pretty incredible considering how much power Rockstar has. But we'll have to see in January. And I think we'll all be really excited to see what they announce. And
And
how much it costs, when the exact date, and the launch titles and all that.
And honestly, I'm curious to see how they kind of maintain this for 2.5 months. Like, we know when and where it's going to be revealed, but you have to keep yourself in the conversation somehow, and you just told us that everything we want to know isn't coming for 2.5 months. So do they start teasing it out? Do they be like, are they going to be like, oh, Capcom's going to be there, Square Enix is going to be there, Activision is going to be there? Do you have, because, like, what happens right now, and I think this is a bad idea, is that right now it seems like a lot of the third parties have gag orders on them. They can say that they're working on the system, but they can't tell you specific games. So it's like, is this game coming to the Switch? I don't know.
Yeah, and that was something that came up with Skyrim, and I think it led to a lot of
confusion,
yeah. And I do think it's a mistake to do that. You know, just let people come out and say, yeah, Skyrim's coming to the Switch, and this is coming to the Switch and all that. I think Nintendo sometimes gets a little bit too caught up in secrecy for their own good, but, you know, I don't think Nintendo will change anytime soon, so we'll just have to see. But I do think I'm skeptical they're going to announce really anything between now and January. But, yeah, I mean, maybe they could start hinting. I mean, hinting stuff would be nice, but I think they're going to really just focus on Pokemon in November, and then you know, the NES and Super Mario Run, and really try to maximize.
Can I just bitch about that real quick? That the NES Classic is out within 2 weeks as of this recording, and you still can't pre-order it anywhere. So yeah,
that's very strange. It's very strange. I mean, makes no sense.
See, if to this, me. If this was a normal company, I'd be fine, because I'm just like, okay, you know, I'll go to a store November 11th and I'll pick it up. This is Nintendo, and I'm just like, I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to be outside on Nintendo World Store that day hoping to get one and treat it like a Mad Max movie. We're all just fighting for scraps. Because I do think that, especially at the price that it is, that this should be something that you have on store shelves throughout the holiday seasons, so that parents... Yeah. Grandparents, friends can go to a store, see it, and pick it. Because it's a very good impulse buy. It's a very $60 for some of these games you grew up on is, I think, a very easy, oh, I'm going to get that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a genius thing to do. You know, they're kind of screwing up with the messaging. They should be having commercials about it. And, you know, they're just sort of not really... It's kind of what I'm worried about with the Switch, is it's a great idea, but then they don't kind of follow through with it. But I guess we'll have to see how they, when it gets closer, even though it's only like, what, you said 2 weeks away. It's that's too close for them not to have pre-orders and commercials and things like that. But I don't know. We'll have to see. But I think that will do it for now. We'll probably do... maybe on dual wielding or something before the January event. But for Earl and Scott, and Dan, this has been the Amazing Way Average Show. Thanks for listening.
Wunderbar.